It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. Around the time of the Copenhagen Climate Summit back in 2009, we aired a number of reports about the UN mechanism which seeks to reduce emissions from deforestation and degradation, known as RED. The idea is to channel payments to countries or communities to enable them to protect their forest and so help limit climate disruption. Among the places we visited was the Brazilian Amazon, where one remote indigenous tribe, the Suruí, was pioneering a new forest management plan. Well, there are some new developments in that story, but before we hear them, here's a reminder of the original report from Living on Earth's Bruce Gellerman and Bobby Bascom with their translator, Marco Lima.
Chief Almir Suruí carefully unfolds a map and spreads it on a table. The Suruí have been living here in the southwest Amazon for thousands of years. Yet this map of their homeland is the first of its kind.
Com certeza, porque esse aqui é análise do próprio nosso povo.
If you look individually to every single spot, every single creek, what we did here was simply understand deep inside of our wealth. Our own people, we know what we have.
On the map are places where the Suruí harvest cashews and other foods from the forest, and tiny symbols mark sites where shamans perform rituals and the Suruí fought historic battles.
And what is this? It looks like a little hut.
Um local onde foi feito contato com o povo Suruí.
Pawentiga is the place where there was made the contact with the Suruí people.
First contact with the Suruí was September 7th, 1969. That's the day Brazilian government agents first approached the tribe. Settlers soon followed, stealing 80% of the Suruí land and bringing new diseases that killed 90% of the people.
Today, the Suruí are fighting back. We're in the Suruí business office in the small town of Cacoal. On a wall hangs a bow and arrow and a long, sharp spear. And on a conference table, a laptop. The Suruí are now defending their land with computers, GPS units, and satellite images donated by the U.S.-based Amazon conservation team. The Suruí use the technology to create this detailed map of their reserve.
Aqui eu vou mostrar para vocês.
I'm going to show you now how do we want to use technology to the protection of our territory.
So right now you're using your laptop to zoom in on, is that your house right there?
Minha casa é aqui.
Here you can see very well how much deforestation we have, and also above here you can see the other indigenous territory.
São cidades, são fazendas.
All the whites you can see, all the white spots, these are farms that have already destroyed the forest.
To preserve what's left of the forest and replant what's been lost to settlers, Chief Almir has devised a 50-year management plan. It's a pioneering indigenous RED project. The Suruí hope to profit by protecting their 600,000-acre forest and auction off the carbon stored in the trees.
They plan to sell the forest carbon as credits to companies and countries that want to offset their climate-disrupting emissions. To verify their carbon inventory, the tribe uses images from orbiting satellites. In just two generations, the Suruí have gone from the Stone Age to the Space Age.
You know, it's giving you a whole different viewpoint on the world. I mean, when you show this to the people of your tribe, you show these satellite pictures, what did they say?
A gente pensou que essa imagem era de monstro que gosta de engolir floresta.
We thought that this image were something like coming from the eye of a monster who liked to eat forests. And then we thought, well, we can maybe use the eyes of this monster to protect the forest.
It's 25 bone-jarring miles from Chief Almir's office to the Suruí tribal village. Our guide Marco drives while we bounce around and back. Almir sits in front.
We travel past fields that have been slashed for their hardwood and burned to make way for cattle ranches and soy farms. All that remains of what was once a dense rainforest are knee-high tree stumps and bitter memories of first contact.
Então tivemos que ceder a maior parte do nosso território.
We had to give up on our land to survive, okay, to remain alive. I'm not against farms, I'm not against production. The only thing I'm really concerned and that I think the white men should see is that they have to grow with sustainable responsibility.
When you see this, does it make you angry? Does it make you...
Eu acho que primeiro a gente fica muito triste.
I get first of all sad because I really don't know
what happened to a guy like this who simply comes and clears everything? I don't know what goes in his brain.
Bom, nós estamos chegando agora no território.
Now we're getting to the Surui people. As you can see, this is the region of the Paeté people. And you can see the amazing difference of vegetation of what you can see over there and what is in here. Here you can see the cattle, and there you can see the pristine forest.
The difference couldn't be more dramatic. Deforestation ends where Surui territory begins. Like a surgeon's knife, the chainsaws of illegal loggers have cut clean, separating dense Surui forest reserve from open farmland. At a sharp bend in the road, we see loggers leaning on dirt motorbikes, and they see us. We get cold, hard stares. I want to stop and talk to the loggers.
But Almir says, oh, no, keep going.
Let's not stop. People are going to give us a hard time.
Why is that? They
threaten us because all this logging here is illegal.
Eu já fui ameaçado muitas vezes na região.
I was threatened so many times here.
Muito perigoso.
It's very dangerous.
Over the past decade, 11 tribal elders in the Amazon have been assassinated. 2 were Surui. It was almost 3. A few years ago, someone tried to run Almir off this road. He was evacuated out of Brazil, and when he returned, he was promised protection. But Almir says that was a joke.
Secret security they were supposed to take care of me, it's so secret that I've never seen.
That's quite a trip.
We finally arrive at the Surui village. It's a scattering of wood huts with palm thatch roofs. The Surui sleep in rope hammocks and use wood to cook in open fire pits.
Bom dia.
Next to a vegetable garden are solar panels, and where coffee beans dry, a satellite dish.
Marcos então fala pro Bruce que aqui é nossa aldeia, né?
Here is our tribe.
Meu pai,
here you have
irmão,
my father,
sobrinho,
my mother, my nephews, irmão, my brothers.
The Surui have extended families, and elders are revered. Almir proudly introduces us to his father, the former chief of the tribe.
Marco, Bruce,
Marco,
Bob.
Marco, eh?
Marco.
Bruce.
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 Bob.
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 He said that his name is Marimop.
Chief Marimop's face is lined with tribal tattoos. His son, Chief Almir, has none. The custom ended 40 years ago, after first contact with white settlers. Surui chiefs can have up to 4 wives. So far, Almir has 2. He's the critical link bridging the tribe's past with its future. Chief Almir is the first of the Surui to attend college. Still, tradition and lore guide his way.
The forest is sacred to the Surui. It's essential for their existence and subsistence. The forest provides. A young woman sits on a low wood stool and with quick, sharp blows from her machete, cracks open nuts she's gathered from the forest, saving the shells and what's inside.
Oh my God, there's worms.
Yeah.
Worms!
Hey, Bobby.
Close look at what she's doing.
Oh, those aren't nuts. Those are worms. What are they for? Are those for lunch? Mm-hmm. Es para desayuno, para comida?
She's cutting the shell, and watch, she cuts the shell, then she,
beads?
Yeah, she's making beads.
Oh.
It's a short hike to the forest where the Surui gather these nuts. As we walk, Chief Almir details his 50-year management plan. The tribe will continue to protect the forest as they've always done, and replant 18,000 acres of trees illegal loggers cut down on Surui territory.
All told, the tribe plans to grow 1 million new trees. So far, they've planted 80,000.
Tornar isso aqui floresta natural.
I think what we should do is make this a forest again. Let this area receive the species that always belonged to here.
Como vocês estão vendo aqui, recebeu esse
feel the air. Smell this, so delicious.
Não só pelo nariz, mas também...
Not only through our noses, but don't you feel your skin breathing?
Can you restore the forest to the condition it was before it was destroyed?
Pode, é possível.
Yes, we definitely can. That's why we are researching on areas where today is pasture. Because this way we will, through science, understand what kind of species used to live there.
And then we can apply to every area according to their needs.
This is result of reforestry already.
Mogno.
This is also hardwood, mogno.
Cerejeira.
Brazilian cherry.
Yeah, how did you choose these trees? Why these trees and not some other kind?
Porque aqui nós priorizamos.
The way we thought and planned was let's replant the trees that suffered the bigger impact.
E alimenta o nosso povo.
And we also choose fruit trees that can feed our people.
E depois a gente estamos trabalhando.
And we also picked trees that have big importance on our rituals, things that really make difference for our culture.
Porque a ideia é manejar a floresta como ela é.
Our main idea is to make use of the forest the way it is, keeping it, preserving it.
Usar serviço dela e como ela é, respeitar ela como ela é, então.
Respecting the forest, using the forest the way it first of all is going to remain preserved, and then of course in a way that we can also benefit not only us but also the rest of the world.
What is that?
Avisar, oh, tá chegando.
Here they're coming. That's what they're saying.
Bruce Gellerman and the Akakai bird, and the Suruwi believe its calls warn them when they are being watched. Now, nearly 4 years since we recorded those calls, many people are watching in the Suruwi's forest. Loggers are still there and still a threat, but the scientists seeking to protect the forest are there too, and their work is close to paying off. Living on Earth's Bobby Bascom has an update on the latest developments.
When I first visited the Suruwi village, they were mapping the boundaries of their forest and marking important cultural sites. Today, they are busy mapping individual trees using a smartphone. Rebecca Moore, the engineering manager for Google Earth Outreach, is working with the Suruwi on the project.
They are using Google Android smartphones that allow the Suruwi to go out into their forest and do a survey and gather information, let's say, about the diameter and the species of the trees, the locations of the trees, and that ends up being aggregated and estimating the entire volume of forest that they have for which they are compensated.
Before smartphones came to the Amazon, Suruwi researchers went out into the forest with GPS units strapped to their backs and kept detailed notes in notebooks and on laptop computers. It would take days or weeks to compile all the data, but now
they collect the data, it's automatically timestamped, date-stamped, GPS located, and it goes into their database and calculations are automatically performed.
They need to be able to go back to the same trees years later and measure them again to see how much they've grown. Then they can calculate how much carbon the trees have absorbed in the process.
What they're going to do is put barcodes on the trees, and the Google Android smartphone will recognize, oh, this was tree 1, 2, 3, 4. It was this amount of biomass 5 years ago, and this is how much it is now.
So are you telling me that if I walk through their forest, there's going to be barcodes on the trees like I'm in the grocery store?
I guess, but the size of the barcode relative to the size of these trees in the Amazon, I don't think you will notice the barcode.
So far, so good. But this is the Amazon, an extremely hostile environment. It's hot, it rains a lot, and everywhere you turn, there are animals.
It turns out that there are leafcutter ants that like plastic and they chew through the plastic barcode. So there need to be other experiments with new materials that are more resistant to leafcutter ants and to apparently the monkeys that like the metal tags.
So monkeys run off with the shiny metal tags and leafcutter ants chew up the plastic ones. But in spite of those challenges, Chief Almir says they've been able to calculate how much carbon is locked up in their trees. And it's a lot.
Sim, descobrimos. Cada ano pode chegar no futuro.
We have calculated that the Suruwi will be avoiding the emissions of about 100,000 tons of carbon into the air every year by protecting our territory and avoiding that it gets to be deforested.
100,000 tons of carbon is roughly equal to the carbon dioxide emitted by 22,000 U.S. cars in a year. At the moment, Almir is reluctant to estimate how much money the carbon credits will generate for his tribe. But Rebecca Moore says the mapping they've already done actually makes their trees more valuable.
You can charge more for carbon that has social and environmental co-benefits. Under various financial mechanisms, if your forest provides livelihood to indigenous people, if it is a natural ecosystem that houses biodiversity, if it has rivers within it, if there's certain, it's called ecosystem services, that a natural forest, an intact landscape can provide, you can charge more for the carbon in your trees. And so documenting that with the cultural map actually brings this additional financial benefit to them as well.
It's a long, complicated process to go from mapping trees to actually getting checks in the mail for protecting them and the carbon they contain. The Surui project was recently validated under the Verified Carbon Standard. That guarantees the carbon credits are legitimate and the environmental benefits are real. The very first RED project to get paid is the Kasigao Corridor in southwest Kenya near the Tanzanian border. Michael Korchinski is CEO and founder of Wildlife Works, the NGO organizing that project.
So we came to this part of Kenya nearly 16 years ago with the idea of implementing a new kind of conservation, a conservation model that would be based on innovative market forces rather than the typical charitable model.
Korchinski worked with locals to protect 500,000 acres of dryland forest that's home to a diversity of African wildlife, including elephants, lions, and buffalo. The area lies between two national parks and was under increasing pressure from subsistence agriculture.
The conflict in the corridor between people and wildlife was becoming quite intense. So we thought if we can bring a model to solve this intense conflict, then that model will probably work elsewhere.
The United Nations, the official organizer of RED, is still a few years away from developing a formal program to pay countries for protecting their forests. So the Kenya project decided to work outside the UN.
For those of us that work in conservation, every year is precious. We lose more forest every year. So we decided that we would see if we could jump the gun and get started with the private sector and not wait for the global solution to come from the UN.
And private companies committed to running carbon-neutral operations are supporting it. The Kasigao Corridor's largest customers are the South African bank Nedbank and a European insurance company called Allianz. The project had to go through three rounds of independent audits to certify how much carbon is locked up in the trees and that those trees are actually being protected. But it paid off.
The project is avoiding about 1.2 million tons a year for 30 years. So approximately 35 million tons of emissions over the life of the project.
The price of carbon on the voluntary carbon market is currently $8 per ton. That means that 1.2 million tons will yield the project more than $9 million a year. One-third of that money goes to institutional costs, but the remaining two-thirds goes directly to the community. And $6 million a year can go a long way in Kenya.
One of the things about RED, in our opinion, is that the scale of finance available through RED, if RED continues to be successful, it can be transformative for communities.
In this case, the community decided to spend the bulk of their RED money on education and clean water projects.
We think RED is a fantastic mechanism to empower forest communities to protect their forest and yet benefit economically. Most forest communities like forests. They live in forests because they like forests. They don't want to see their forest destroyed around them. But they need economic power to prevent others from destroying their forest around them.
Empowering forest communities through RED is a growing trend around the world, from Panama to Cambodia to the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Surui project in the Amazon is the first indigenous RED project in the world. It's also the first RED project of any kind in Brazil, and only the second in the world to get validated. Chief Almir Surui says that the health of his community and the health of the forest are one and the same.
Nós podemos viver sem floresta.
My family, we cannot live without the forest, much as we cannot live without our culture. We very much believe that we need the forest and our culture to survive and to live. What we want to achieve by developing a green economy, developing a sustainable way of life, is guaranteeing the future of the next generations.
Within a few months, the Surui expect to wrap up the RED certification process and start getting paid for protecting the forest they've lived in for millennia. And Surui leaders hope RED will help guarantee a healthy forest for future generations of the tribe. For Living on Earth, I'm Bobby Bascom.
Our update from Brazil was made possible by a fellowship from the Earth Journalism Network. You can find pictures from the Surui village in the Amazon over at our website, loe.org.